Clotho began to speak then, and he went on for a fair length of time. Ralph had no idea how long exactly, because time was different on this level, compressed somehow. At times there were no words at all in what he said. Verbal terms were replaced with simple bright images, like those in a child's rebus puzzle. Ralph supposed this was telepathy, and thus pretty amazing. But while it was happening, it felt as natural as breath. Sometimes both words and images were lost, interrupted by puzzling breaks in communication. Yet even then, Ralph was usually able to get some idea of what Clotho was trying to convey, and he had an idea Lois was understanding what was hidden in those lapses even more clearly than he was himself.
First, know that there are only four constants in that area of existence where your lives and ours, the lives of the overlap. These four constants are life, death, the purpose, and the random. All these words have meaning for you, but you now have a slightly different concept of life and death, do you not?
Ralph and Lois nodded hesitantly.
Lachesis and I are agents of death. This makes us figures of dread to most short-timers. Even those who pretend to accept us and our function are usually afraid. In pictures, we are sometimes shown as a fearsome skeleton or a hooded figure whose face cannot be seen.
Clotho put his tiny hands on his white-clad shoulders and pretended to shudder. The burlesque was good enough to make Ralph grin.
But we are not only agents of death, Ralph and Lois. We are also agents of the purpose. And now you must listen closely, for I would not be misunderstood. There are those of your kind who feel that everything happens by design, and there are those who feel all events are simply a matter of luck or chance. The truth is that life is both random and on purpose, although not in equal measure. Life is like...
Here Clotho formed a circle with his arms, like a small child trying to show the shape of the earth. And within it, Ralph saw a brilliant and evocative image. Thousands, or perhaps it was millions, of playing cards fanned out in a flickering rainbow of hearts and spades and clubs and diamonds. He also saw a great many jokers in this huge pack. Not so many as to make up a suit of their own, but clearly a lot more, proportionally speaking, than the two or three found in the usual deck. Every one of them was grinning, and everyone was wearing a battered Panama with a crescent bitten out of the brim. Every one carried a rusty scalpel. Ralph looked at Clotho with widening eyes. Clotho nodded.
Yes, I don't know exactly what you saw, but I know you saw what I was trying to convey. Lois, what about you?
Lois, who loved playing cards, nodded palely.
Atropos is the joker in the deck? That's what you mean?
He is an agent of the random. We, Lachesis and I, serve that other force, the one which accounts for most events in both individual lives and in life's wider stream. On your level of the building, Ralph and Lois, every creature is a short-time creature and has an appointed span. This isn't to say that a child pops out of its mother's womb with a sign around its neck reading, cut cord at 84 years, 11 months, 9 days, 6 hours, 4 minutes, and 21 seconds. That idea is ridiculous. Yet time passages are usually set. And as both of you have seen, one of the many functions the short time aura serves is as a clock.
Lois stirred, and as Ralph turned to look at her, he saw an amazing thing. The sky overhead was growing pale. He guessed it must be 5 in the morning. They had arrived at the hospital at around 9 o'clock on Tuesday evening, and now, all at once, it was Wednesday, October 6th. Ralph had heard of time flying, but this was ridiculous.
Lois, your job is what we call natural death, isn't it?
Her aura flickered with confused, incomplete images. A man, the late Mr. Chass, Ralph was quite sure, lying in an oxygen tent. Jimmy V opening his eyes to look at Ralph and Lois in the instant before Clotho cut his balloon string. The obituary page from the Derry News, peppered with photographs, most not much bigger than postage stamps, of the weekly harvest from the local hospitals and nursing homes. Both Clotho and Lachesis shook their heads. Lachesis:
"There is no such thing as natural death, not really. Our job is purposeful death. We take the old and the sick, but we take others as well. Just yesterday, for instance, we took a young man of 28, a carpenter. 2 short weeks ago, he fell from a scaffold and fractured his skull. During those 2 weeks, his aura was..."
Ralph got a fractured image of a thunderstruck aura, like the one which had surrounded the baby in the elevator. Clotho:
"At last the change came, the turning of the aura. We knew it would come, but not when it would come. When it did, we went to him and sent him on."
"Sent him on to where?" It was Lois who asked the question, broaching the touchy subject of the afterlife almost by accident. Ralph grabbed for his mental safety belt, almost hoping for one of those peculiar blanks. But when their overlapped answers came, they were perfectly clear. Clotho:
"To everywhere." Lachesis: "To other worlds than these."
Ralph felt a mixture of relief and disappointment. "That sounds very poetic, but I think what it means, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the afterlife is as much a mystery to you guys as it is to us." Lachesis, sounding a bit stiff:
"On another occasion, we might have time to discuss such things, but not now. As you have no doubt already noticed, time passes faster on this level of the building."
Ralph looked around and saw the morning had already brightened considerably. "Sorry." Clotho, smiling:
"Not at all. We enjoy your questions and find them refreshing. Curiosity exists everywhere along life's continuum, but nowhere is it as abundant as here. But what you call the afterlife has no place in the four constants, life and death, the random and the purpose, which concern us now. The approach of almost every death, which serves the purpose, takes a course with which we are very familiar. The auras of those who will die purposeful deaths turn gray as the time of finishing approaches. This gray deepens steadily to black. We are called when the aura... And we come exactly as you saw last night. We give release to those who suffer, peace to those in terror, rest to those who cannot find rest. Most purposeful deaths are expected, even welcomed, but not all. We are sometimes called to take men, women, and children who are in the best of health, yet their auras turn suddenly, and their time of finishing has come.
Ralph remembered the young man in the sleeveless Celtics jersey he'd seen bopping into the Red Apple yesterday afternoon. He had been the picture of health and vitality, except for the spectral oil slick surrounding him, that was. Ralph opened his mouth, perhaps to mention this young man, or to ask about his fate, then closed it again. The sun was directly overhead now, and a bizarre certainty suddenly came to him, that he and Lois had become the subject of lecherous discussion in the secret city of the old Crocs.
"Anybody seen them? No? Think they've run off together? Eloped, maybe? No, not at their age, but they might be shacked up."
"I don't know if Ralphie's got any live rounds left in the old ammo dump, but she's always looked like a hot ticket to me."
"Yeah, walks like she knows what to do with it, don't she?"
The image of his oversized rust bucket waiting patiently behind one of the ivy-covered units of the Derry cabins, while the springs boinged and sproinged salaciously inside, came to Ralph, and he grinned. He couldn't help it. A moment later, the alarming idea that he might be broadcasting his thoughts on his aura came to him, and he slammed the door on the picture at once. Yet wasn't Lois looking at him with a certain amused speculation? Ralph turned his attention hastily back to Clotho.
"Atropos serves the random. Not all deaths of the sort short timers called senseless and unnecessary and tragic are his work, but most are. When a dozen old men and women die in a fire at a retirement hotel,
The chances are good that Atropos has been there, taking souvenirs and cutting cords. When an infant dies in his crib for no apparent reason, the cause, more often than not, is Atropos and his rusty scalpel. When a dog, yes, even a dog, for the destinies of almost all living things in the short-time world fall among either the random or the purpose, is run over in the road because the driver of the car that hit him picked the wrong moment to glance at his watch.
Lois, is that what happened to Rosalie?
Clotho.
Atropos is what happened to Rosalie.
Ralph's friend Joe Weiser was only what we call fulfilling circumstance.
Lachesis.
And Atropos is also what happened to your friend, the late Mr. McGovern.
Lois looked the way Ralph felt, dismayed but not really surprised. It was now late afternoon. Perhaps as many as 18 short-time hours had passed since they had last seen Bill, and Ralph had known the man's time was extremely short, even last night. Lois, who had inadvertently put her hands inside him, probably knew it even better.
Ralph, when did it happen? How long after we saw him?
Lachesis.
Not long. While he was leaving the hospital.
I'm sorry for your loss and for giving you the news in such clumsy fashion. We speak to short-timers so infrequently that we forget how. I didn't mean to hurt you, Ralph and Lois.
Lois told him it was all right, that she quite understood, but tears were trickling down her cheeks, and Ralph felt them burning in his own eyes. The idea that Bill could be gone, that the little shithead in the dirty smock had gotten him, was hard to grasp. Was he to believe McGovern would never hoist that satiric, bristly eyebrow of his again? Never bitch about how cruddy it was to get old again? Impossible. He turned suddenly to Clotho.
Show us.
Clotho, surprised, almost dithering.
I don't think...
Ralph, seeing is believing to us short-time schmoes. Didn't you guys ever hear that one?
Lois spoke up unexpectedly.
Yes, show us, but only enough so we can know it and accept it. Try not to make us feel any worse than we already do.
Clotho and Lachesis looked at each other, then seemed to shrug without actually moving their narrow shoulders. Lachesis flicked the first two fingers of his right hand upward, creating a blue-green peacock's fan of light. In it Ralph saw a small, eerily perfect representation of the ICU corridor. A nurse pushing a pharmacy cart came into this arc and crossed it. At the far side of the viewing area, she actually seemed to curve for a moment before passing out of view.
Lois, delighted in spite of the circumstances.
It's like watching a movie in a soap bubble.
Now McGovern and Mr. Plum stepped out of Bob Paulhurst's room. McGovern had put on an old Derry-High lettuce sweater, and his friend was zipping up a jacket. They were clearly giving up the death watch for another night. McGovern was walking slowly, lagging behind Mr. Plum. Ralph could see that his downstairs neighbor and sometime friend didn't look good at all. He felt Lois's hand slip onto his upper arm and grip hard. He put his hand over hers. Halfway to the elevator, McGovern stopped, braced himself against the wall with one hand, and lowered his head. He looked like a totally blown runner at the end of a marathon. For a moment, Mr. Plum went on walking. Ralph could see his mouth moving and thought, he doesn't know he's talking to thin air. Not yet, at least. Suddenly, Ralph didn't want to see anymore. Inside the blue-green arc, McGovern put one hand to his chest. The other went to his throat and began to rub as if he were checking for wattles. Ralph couldn't tell for sure, but he thought his downstairs neighbor's eyes looked frightened. He remembered the grimace of hate on Doc Number 3's face when he realized a short-timer had presumed to step into his business with one of the local strays. What had he said?
I'll fuck you over, Schultz. I'll fuck you over big time. And I'll fuck your friends over. Do you get me?
A terrible idea, almost a certainty, dawned in Ralph's mind as he watched Bill McGovern crumple slowly to the floor.
Lois, make it go away. Please, make it go away.
She buried her face against Ralph's shoulder.
Clotho and Lachesis exchanged uneasy looks, and Ralph realized he had already begun to revise his mental picture of them as omniscient and all-powerful. They might be supernatural creatures, but Dr. Joy's brothers they were not. He had an idea they weren't much shakes at predicting the future, either. Fellas with really efficient crystal balls probably wouldn't have a look like that in their entire repertoire. They're feeling their way along, just like the rest of us, Ralph thought, and he felt a certain reluctant sympathy for Mr. C and Mr. L. The blue-green arc of light floating in front of Lachesis and the images trapped inside it suddenly disappeared. Clotho, sounding defensive,
"Please remember that it was your choice to see, Ralph and Lois. We did not show you that willingly."
Ralph barely heard this. His terrible idea was still developing, like a photograph one does not wish to see but cannot turn away from. He was thinking of Bill's hat, Rosalie's faded blue bandana, and Lois's missing diamond earrings.
"I'll fuck your friends over, Shorts, do you get me? I hope so. I most certainly do."
He looked from Clotho to Lachesis, his sympathy for them disappearing. What replaced it was a dull pulse of anger. Lachesis had said there was no such thing as accidental death, and that included McGovern's. Ralph had no doubt that Atropos had taken McGovern when he had, for one simple reason. He'd wanted to hurt Ralph, to punish Ralph for messing into, what had Dorrance called it? Long-time business. Old Dor had suggested he not do that. A good policy, no doubt. But he, Ralph, had really had no choice. Because these two bald half-pints had messed in with him. They had, in a very real sense, gotten Bill McGovern killed. Clotho and Lachesis saw his anger and took a step backward, although they seemed to do it without actually moving their feet, their faces becoming more uneasy than ever. "You two are the reason Bill McGovern's dead. That's the truth of it, isn't it?"
Clotho. "Please, if you'll just let us finish explaining."
Lois was staring at Ralph, worried and scared.
"Ralph, what's wrong? Why are you angry?
Don't you get it? This little setup of theirs cost Bill McGovern his life. We're here because Atropos has either done something these guys don't like or is getting ready to..."
Lachesis. "You're jumping to conclusions, Ralph."
"But there's one very basic problem. He knows we see him. Atropos knows we see him." Lois's eyes widened with terror and with understanding. A small white hand fell on Ralph's shoulder and lay there like smoke.
"Please, if you'll only let us explain."
He felt that change, that blink, happen in his body even before he was fully aware he had willed it. He could feel the wind again coming out of the dark like the blade of a cold knife, and shivered. The touch of Clotho's hand was now no more than a phantom vibration just below the surface of his skin. He could see all three of them, but now they were milky and faint. Now they were ghosts. "I've stepped down. Not all the way back down to where we started, but at least down to a level where they can have almost no physical contact with me. My aura, my balloon string. Yes, I'm sure they could get at those things. But the physical part of me that lives my real life in the short-time world? No way, Jose." Lois's voice, as distant as a fading echo.
"Ralph, what are you doing to yourself?"
He looked at the ghostly images of Clotho and Lachesis. Now they looked not just uneasy or slightly guilty, but downright scared. Their faces were distorted and hard to see, but their fear was nonetheless unmistakable. Clotho, his voice distant but audible.
"Come back, Ralph. Please come back."
"If I do, will you quit playing games and be straight with us?" Lachesis, fading, disappearing.
"Yes. Yes."
Ralph made that interior blink happen again. The three of them came back into focus. At the same time, color once more filled up the spaces of the world, and time resumed its former sprint. He observed the waning moon sliding down the far side of the sky like a dollop of glowing mercury. Lois threw her arms around his neck, and for a moment he wasn't sure if she was hugging him or trying to strangle him.
Thank God. I thought you were going to leave me.
Ralph kissed her, and for a moment his head was filled with a pleasant jumble of sensory input. The taste of fresh honey, a texture like combed wool, and the smell of apples. A thought blipped across his mind. What would it be like to make love up here? And he banished it at once. He needed to think and speak very carefully in the next few minutes, hours, days. And thinking about stuff like that would only make it that much harder. He turned to the little bald doctors and measured them with his eyes.
I hope you mean it, because if you don't, I think we'd better call this horse race off right now and go our separate ways.
Clotho and Lachesis didn't bother with the exchanged glance this time. They both nodded eagerly. Lachesis spoke, and he did so in a defensive tone of voice. These fellows, Ralph suspected, were a lot more pleasant to deal with than Atropos, but no more used to being questioned, to being put on their mettle, Ralph's mother would have said, than he was.
Everything we told you was true, Ralph and Lois. We may have left out the possibility that Atropos has a slightly greater understanding of the situation than we would really like, but...
Ralph, what if we refuse to listen to any more of this nonsense? What if we just turn and walk away?
Neither replied, but Ralph thought he saw a dismaying thing in their eyes. They knew that Atropos had Lois's earrings, and they knew he knew. The only one who didn't know, he hoped, was Lois herself. She was now tugging his arm.
Don't do that, Ralph. Please don't. We need to hear them out.
He turned back to them and made a curt motion for them to go on. Lachesis.
Under ordinary circumstances, we don't interfere with Atropos, nor he with us. We couldn't interfere with him even if we wanted to. The random and the purpose are like the red and black squares on a checkerboard, defining each other by contrast. But Atropos does want to interfere with the way things operate. Interfering is, in a very real sense, what he was made to do. And on rare occasions, the opportunity to do so in a really big way presents itself. Efforts to stop his meddling are rare.
Clotho.
The truth is actually a little stronger, Ralph and Lois. Never in our experience has an effort been made to check or bar him.
Lachesis.
And are made only if the situation into which he intends to meddle is a very delicate one, where many serious matters are balanced and counterbalanced. This is one of those situations. Atropos has severed a life cord he would have done well to leave alone. This will cause terrible problems on all levels, not to mention a serious imbalance between the random and the purpose, unless the situation is rectified. We cannot deal with what's happening. The situation has passed far beyond our skills. We can no longer see clearly, let alone act. Yet in this case, our inability to see hardly matters, because in the end, only short-timers can oppose the will of Atropos. That is why you two are here.
Ralph, are you saying that Atropos cut the cord of someone who was supposed to die a natural death? Or a purposeful death?
Clotho. Not exactly. Some lives, a very few, bear no clear designation. When Atropos touches such lives, trouble is always likely. All bets are off, you say. Such undesignated lives are like...
Clotho drew his hands apart, and an image, playing cards again, flashed between them. A row of seven cards that were swiftly turned over, one after another by an unseen hand. An ace, a deuce, a joker, a tray, a seven, a queen. The last card the invisible hand flipped over was blank.
Clotho. Does this picture help?
Ralph's brow furrowed. He didn't know if it did or not. Somewhere out there was a person who was neither a regular playing card nor a joker in the deck. A person who was perfectly blank, up for grabs by either side. Atropos had slashed this guy's metaphysical air hose, and now somebody, or something had called a timeout. Lois. It's Ed you're talking about, isn't it? Ralph wheeled around and stared at her sharply, but she was looking at Lachesis. Ed Deep Know is the blank card. Lachesis was nodding. How did you know that, Lois? Who else could it be? She wasn't smiling at him precisely, but Ralph felt the sense of a smile. He turned back to Clotho and Lachesis.
Okay, at last we're getting somewhere. So who flashed the red light on this deal? I don't think it was you guys. I have an idea that on this one, at least, you two aren't much more than the hired help.
They put their heads together for a moment and murmured, but Ralph saw a faint ochre tinge appear like a seam at the place where their green-gold auras overlapped, and knew he was right. At last, the two of them faced Ralph and Lois again. Lachesis.
Yes, that is basically the case. You have a way of putting things in perspective, Ralph. We haven't had a conversation like this in 1,000 years.
Clotho.
If ever.
Ralph.
All you have to do is tell the truth, boys.
Lachesis, as plaintively as a child.
We have been.
Ralph, the whole truth.
Lachesis.
All right, the whole truth. Yes, it is Ed Deepnose cord Atropos cut. We don't know this because we have seen it. We've passed beyond our ability to see clearly, as I said. But because it is the only logical conclusion. Deepno is undesignated, neither of the random nor of the purpose. That we do know. And his must have been some sort of master cord to have caused all this uproar and concern. The very fact that he has lived so long after his life cord was severed indicates his power and importance. When Atropos severed this cord, he set a terrible chain of events in motion.
Lois shivered and stepped closer to Ralph.
Lachesis. You called us hired help. You were more right than you knew. We are, in this case, simply messengers. Our job is to make you and Lois aware of what has happened and what is expected of you, and that job is now almost done. As to who flashed the red light, we can't answer that question because we don't really know.
I don't believe you.
But he heard the lack of conviction in his own voice, if it was a voice.
Clotho. Don't be silly, of course you do. Would you expect the director of a large automobile company to invite a lowly worker up to the boardroom so they could explain the reasons behind all the company's policies? Or perhaps give him the details on why they decided to close one plant and leave another one open?
Lachesis.
We're a little more highly placed than the men who work on automobile assembly lines. But we're still what you would call working Joes, Ralph. No more and no less.
Clotho.
Be content with this. Beyond the short-time levels of existence and the long-time levels on which Lachesis, Atropos, and I exist, there are yet other levels. These are inhabited by creatures we could call all-timers, beings which are either eternal or so close to it as to make no difference. Short-timers and long-timers live in overlapping spheres of existence, on connected floors of the same building, if you like, ruled by the random and the purpose. Above these floors, inaccessible to us, but very much a part of the same tower of existence, live other beings. Some of them are marvelous and wonderful. Others are hideous beyond our ability to comprehend, let alone yours. These beings might be called the higher purpose and the higher random. Or perhaps there is no random beyond a certain level. We suspect that may be the case, but we have no real way of telling. We do know that it is something from one of these higher levels that has interested itself in Ed, and that something else from up there made a countermove. That countermove is you, Ralph and Lois.
Lois gave Ralph a dismayed look that he hardly noticed. The idea that something was moving them around, like chess pieces in Fay Chapin's beloved Runway 3 classic, an idea that would have infuriated him under other circumstances, went right by him for the time being. He was remembering the night Ed had called him on the telephone.
"You're drifting into deep water," he'd said, "and there are things swimming around in the undertow you can't even conceive of."
Entities, in other words. Beings too hideous to comprehend, according to Mr. C. And Mr. C. was a gentleman who dealt death for a living.
"They haven't really noticed you yet,"
Ed had told him that night. "But if you keep fooling with me, they will. And you don't want that. Believe me, you don't." "Lois, how did you get us up to this level in the first place?" "It was the insomnia, wasn't it?" Lachesis cautiously.
"Essentially, yes. We're able to make certain small changes in short-time auras. These adjustments cause the rather special form of insomnia that alter the way you dream and the way you perceive the waking world. Adjusting short-time auras is delicate, frightening work. Madness is always a danger, Clotho. At times you may have felt that you were going mad, but neither of you was ever even close. You're much tougher, both of you, than you give yourself credit for."
"These assholes actually think they're being comforting," Ralph marveled, and then pushed his anger away again. He simply had no time to be angry now. Later, maybe he could make up for that. He hoped so. For now, he simply patted Lois's hands, then turned to Clotho and Lachesis again. "Last summer, after he beat his wife up, Ed spoke to me of a being he called the Crimson King. Does that mean anything to you fellas?" Clotho and Lachesis exchanged another look, one which Ralph at first mistook for solemnity. Clotho,
"Ralph, you must remember that Ed is insane, existing in a delusional state."
"Yes, tell me about it."
"But we believe that his Crimson King does exist in one form or another, and that when Atropos cut his life cord, Ed Deepnoe fell directly under this being's influence."
The two little bald doctors looked at each other again, and this time Ralph saw the shared expression for what it really was. Not solemnity, but terror.